Okay. So my name is David Aiken. I'm a Windows Azure Technical Product Manager at Microsoft. And this session is getting started with Windows Azure, virtual machines, and virtual networks. I kind of want to make it really kind of obvious what this session is about, right? So we're going to talk about two things. Can you guess what they are? Yeah, databases and so virtual machines and virtual networks. I've been working with Windows Azure for 5 years now, which apparently makes me half an expert. So I'm only going to know what I'm doing half the time, right? Particularly when I get to the subnets, it's going to sound like I'm reading from my notepad up here. Because when it comes to subnets, it's the one thing in life I decided I would gloss over and switch off on. If I start typing numbers in wrong, I know lots of you are like, oh, I know subnets, really easy. Feel free to join in and help me out when I get the errors, okay? So, there we are. I'm going to show you a lot of things. I think I'm not going to talk about the value prop of Windows Azure and why you might want to use virtual machines and all that kind of thing. I really want to show you kind of where it is, how you get started in the right direction, because there are a lot of moving parts, and hopefully this session will kind of get you on the right rails to be able to do something. So, with that done, let's do a demo. If we lose the internet connection, this will be the shortest session you've been to all week. The thing about a cloud is you can't just bring it on a box and shove it under here and do something with it. So, this is my Windows Azure portal. It's beautiful, isn't it? It's HTML5. It's going to run on your Mac. It's going to run on your Linux machine, on your iPad, on your Surface. I should throw some Microsoft things in, I guess. And this is your dashboard into your data center, which is running in one of Microsoft's data centers. That's the way I want you to think about this. To get here, you need to create a Windows Azure subscription. This is the funny, silly accounting word we use to describe what you're seeing kind of in here. To get a subscription, you go to windowsazure.com, you click on the big free trial button. It's on every single page, so if you can't find it, you might want to, I don't know, get your eyes tested or something. Click on the free trial. We'll ask you for a credit card. This just proves you're a person and not a spam bot. We don't bill you unless you go in and find the dialog box that says start billing me. We have a free trial. It gives you a certain number of hours and a certain number of storage and bandwidth and things. Enough to kind of do some of the things that we're going to show you here. And I'll wait while you all get your laptops out and create an account and then you... Okay. So let's go and create a virtual machine. Now, everyone will do this when they start with Windows Azure. They'll go, create an item. Let's do that. Create an item. Oh, I fancy a virtual machine. From gallery. Oh, this looks cool. We've got a gallery of machine images. You see, we've got some Windows Server images. We also have some Linux images. Oh my gosh, we support Linux running in a VM on Windows Azure. Hell has frozen over. Microsoft do not supply Linux VMs. It would be a really dumb idea for Microsoft to go and build a Linux distro, wouldn't you think? So we've partnered with people like Canonical who provide the Linux distros. So you're not getting some dude from Microsoft kind of going, I'm going to build a Linux distro. You get the professionals doing it, and it's a solid build. And you see we've got 12.04, 12.10 of that. One of them is 12.04 is the long-term supported version. It's great. You can call Canonical and get support. That's awesome. You can also upload your own Linux distros. We have a guide on how you do that. But then, if you're not using one of the ones in the gallery, support is kind of call yourself, I guess, on that. So we're going to do a Linux server, because then I don't have to create any more Linux machines throughout the rest of the app. So we'll do it here now. We'll do 12.04. Next. We'll give the machine a name, so we'll call it, I have no idea. Let's go with the bacon theme again. Bacon 565. We'll give it a password. and then we'll choose which size machine we'd like. Now, a couple of things. First, the password. The username you can change, obviously, I didn't. The password, you probably want a strong password. A lot of the times at Microsoft, we do demos and we use PSSW0ORD1 or something like that. Every demo in the whole Microsoft now is screwed. In the cloud, that gets hacked pretty quickly, right? And someone gets hold of your VM and starts doing, you know, amazing things. So strong passwords. On the machine sizes, today we have a few choices, and it works a little bit like this. You can ignore the first line. That's not really good for a VM, really. But we've got one core, about 1.7 gig of RAM, and it's about 11 cents or so. I can never remember what price this is. You can go on the website and find out. And then it doubles. So medium's two cores and twice as much RAM and twice as the price. And that's what you get billed per hour on that. So I'm going to choose medium for this because I can. And I'm going to click on... I could upload my SSH key, I guess, if I knew what one of those was. And then we'll move on to... I actually do know what one of those is. We'll move on to this. Now, what I'm doing here is I'm defining a DNS name. So I've just pasted the same thing in. And then it'll do a little check to make sure it's available. So here where you've got to create a unique name on Azure. It's not a unique name for you. It's a unique name on Azure. And then I can choose a storage account. My goodness, what would you say to that? It's because I always create my VMs called Bacon. I don't know why. Then we can choose one of the data centers we want to go into. We're going to go into West US because we're kind of in the West US. Makes sense. We have, even though there wasn't eight on the list for the smart cookies, we have eight data centers worldwide, four in the US, two in Europe, and two in Asia. So we're going into the US. I don't have a storage account because you never saw me create one. So we're going to create one automatically. And then we're going to click on next. A little arrow. It's checking this. Come on, come on, come on. You could pend a little faster. There's no way anyone's done that, right? There's no way. Oh, don't be. Oh, shoot. That would do it. That's a little bit annoying. So I'm going to talk while I get out my hotspot and my laptop, and then we'll carry on. But maybe that network will come back on. We'll keep an eye on it. Flip back to the size. Darn it. This is the only problem with any cloud is getting to it, right? It can sometimes be a challenge on this. So, here's what we're going to cover in a few minutes. Talk amongst yourselves. No, I'll do the talking. It's okay. So, first thing, we almost created a VM until we lost the network connection. What that gave us is a virtual machine. The virtual machine wasn't really in anything. It wasn't attached to any network. I have no idea what IP address it was going to get or what subnet range it was going to be in. If you could... I need the power. Can you pull?
Go ahead.
Keep pulling.
Rabbits out of your hat.
It's really long, I'm just saying. Only in Vegas. I'm so fired now, aren't I? Never mind. So we created this virtual machine, and it's just existing in one of our data centers. We didn't really have any control over our IP address. We didn't really even kind of have any idea about storage account. I mean, we just said go and create one, right? We blindly went through this kind of like da 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 da. I've got a network connection failure. No, we've got a virtual machine. So this gets everyone because then you start getting confident. And you build a few more virtual machines, and then none of them can talk to each other, and it all goes a bit kind of Pete Tong. So we're going to walk through some steps on how you should really do this. We're going to start off with working through affinity groups and virtual networks. Down. Right, what do I press? Two.
Awesome. Thank you, sir.
That, ladies and gentlemen, was a strong password.
Okay. We'll not go through the wizard again. Let's go back. Oh, yes. Phone.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sitting at the back and I'm testing my hotspot to make sure it all works. I was hit the wrong button. This is going to connect in a second. And I'll watch for it on there. This could end up being a good recovery or an epic failure. We'll see. So, here's our data center. First thing I want to talk about is an affinity group. This is the weirdest word that we've came up with on Windows Azure. It is buried so far down in the menus that to find it, you'd have to be bored waiting for something to happen. It is almost one of the most important things to go and do, but you only ever do it once, which is kind of why it's all buried away. If you create a virtual network, and we're going to do that in a moment, assuming the network connects, we'll create an affinity group as part of this. But I want to kind of share what an affinity group is. So this is our data center, and should we go and create some virtual machines, we'll get them anywhere, right? When you say, give me a virtual machine, we kind of go, cool, let's go and find a bit of hardware, we'll go and put you on there. We have no kind of concept of putting you in the same place as your machines. If you create an affinity group, however, we'll go and put them next to each other. Why might we want the machines next to each other? Latency, network performance, those types of things. So whenever we're creating things in Windows Azure, we want to try and keep them in the same affinity group. This would be storage, this would be compute. Trying to keep them together is going to tell Windows Azure to try and keep them together. Notice the word try there. So, come on, baby, connect up to the network. Thank you, AT&T. Let's go through and create this real quick now. So we'll do MMS bacon because everything is better with. Hey, that's like crowd participation, isn't it? We'll do medium. We'll go. Let's leave all the defaults. Availability set. We'll talk about those later. We'll click on OK. Bing. We've now got a virtual machine. Way. Thank you. It always, you have to do that, right? I mean, I pretended there was a network outage, but actually you have to start it on one machine and then switch over to another machine to do it there. Yeah. So, this mouse. So what we want to do is, we've done that. Talk about virtual network. So, if you were building out a data center or a branch office, what's the first thing you go and do, right? You go and create a network. You don't go show up with a server and go install Windows or something on it, do you? Because then you're kind of like, oh, I need to plug it in somewhere and I haven't got any networking. So the first thing we want you to do in Windows Azure is create a virtual network. When we create a virtual network, we get to decide what IP address range we'd like to use for our virtual network. Once we've done the virtual network, we can then divide it up into subnets. This is just like setting up your own network at home. You all have subnets at home, right? I do. We give you a DHCP server, so you don't need to set up a DHCP server. DHCP will give your virtual machines an IP address, it will give it the gateway address, and it will give you a DNS address. Now, if you don't do anything, we'll give you our DNS address. But if you want to run something like Active Directory, which requires some funny DNS records that we don't support in our DNS server, you have to create your own DNS server. So imagine this, you spin up a VM and you run DC Promo to get a Windows server running Active Directory. Part of that will give you a DNS server. So then you're kind of like, all right, I've got a DNS server. How do I tell all my machines this is the DNS server? Well, you go into this console and you say, hey, Azure, on your virtual network, This is the IP address of the virtual machine. Okay? With the DNS server on. Lovely. Now, you've got to kind of sketch out a little bit on paper to kind of figure that out. I always do that. Now, the next thing is, if I have my own network on premises and I want to connect this up, we can also create what we call a local network connection. And what happens is you go through the little wizard, you put in some numbers, and we'll create a gateway. And then what you do is you create an IPsec tunnel between the router and or whatever security device you have and the gateway. And that will use a shared key, and that will give you a secure connection back to your on-premises and from on-premises into the cloud. We control that gateway, and there are no rules you can set on. Woohoo! Which means all of your access control is going to happen at your end. So all your ACLs and everything you might want to set, what traffic can come in and out, you're in complete control of. Cool. So let's run through and see how we do that. So I'm going to go into networks, and I'm going to create a virtual network. And we're going to call this MMS BaconNet. We'll go into West US. And it's gone, oh, you don't have any affinity groups, so you probably want to create one. So we'll call this MMS Bacon AG for affinity group. And this is a little wizard, so we'll go through the next step. Ooh, subnets. Now, first of all, we've got to decide what our total address range is going to be. And for the purposes of this demo, I've worked out that that is the right number. If you want to know why, there's a gentleman somewhere down here who understands all of this on there. So now we've defined our address range, which basically gives us from 10.0 to 10.0.0 to 10.0.7. We can start doing subnets. Now, I'm going to call my first subnet ADDNS, which is my little acronym for Active Directory DNS. I am going to choose 25, leave it as a default, 256. And I'm going to create another subnet just for fun, and we'll call that web. And I can create as many subnets as I want, and it just helps me organize my network there. I'm going to click on next. And here is where I go, hey, DNS server, would you like one? Now, if I leave this empty, we'll supply a DNS server and, you know, we'll do the DNS lookup. But if you need Active Directory, as I mentioned, you need to define a DNS server. So I'm going to call this, there's a theme. And then I'm going to say, right, what's the IP address of the DNS server? Now, we're a little bit chicken and egg here, because I haven't created any virtual machines. So how can I possibly know the IP address of the DNS server? Well, I just happen to know through two reasons. One, I called the guy up who owns networking. And two, I tried it. That the first machine I'm going to create is going to have the IP address of 4. So whatever subnet you're working in, we're going to be 10.0.0.4 in this case. That's going to be our DNS server. Now, you through the UI, you can't today change the DNS. So this is going to like really kind of like get on your nerves a little bit. There's an update which will roll out, I think, towards the end of the month, which will allow you to do that through the UI. Today, you can do it through exporting the network configuration to an XML file, editing an XML file, and importing it back in. So you can change it, but it's a little bit of a kind of like, I don't know, I call it a hack, but that's not a nice marketing word. Let's go and configure on the right computer. That's going to confuse the hell out of me. A gateway subnet. So this is the subnet in my cloud network, which the gateway is going to live on. So I worked out that this would probably do it. So remember, I created two subnets. One was 10.0.1, then there was 10.0.2, so my gateway is going on 10.0.3. It makes total sense to me. And I'm going to create a new local network connection. And we're starting to build up this little diagram, and you can see we've got this network called MMS BaconNet. We've got two subnets on it. We're going to create a gateway to some place, which we haven't defined yet, and we've got a DNS server. So we're getting a little diagram up here. So then I've got to specify a local network. So Bacon Corp, clearly. And this is the IP address, the public IP address of the gateway device that I'm going to connect up to. So this will be on the internet, so I'm going to pick some random thing, and what's going to happen is they're going to get a lot of gateway traffic coming through. I have a router on my desk at work, which they used in the keynote on Monday, and I was here, so I haven't had the chance to kind of unplug and reconnect it up anywhere else. So, and then we have to define our on-premises network, and lo and behold, that seemed to work for me. So now we've got all these things. We're going to click on create. We're going to cross our fingers a little bit. See. And we're now creating a virtual network. So, a few things we did there while it's creating. It's going to take a few seconds. One, part of that, we created an affinity group. Everything else we're going to create today, we're going to put in that same affinity group. That's going to keep everything tied together. We also created the virtual network. We've specified an IP address range, and we've also told it that we're going to supply a DNS server. And we've told it what the DNS server is. Now, because we created a local network, we could have put in a DNS IP address of a DNS server already existing in our local network, which I would do had I had a local network to connect to. So that's why I've used the one in the cloud there. So, but it's going to create us an interesting problem, right? Because when we boot with the first VM, it's not going to be able to do any name resolution because there isn't a DNS server there. So I'm going to show you how you get around that as well. If I click onto it, I get a dashboard, and I can go in and see my network configuration. You can see, oh my goodness, there's a bit of a problem. We haven't got a gateway yet. So we've specified how we want the gateway configured, but we haven't actually done it yet. So we're going to click Create Gateway, and it's going to say, do you want to create a gateway? Say yes, and then that's about it. So now what's happening is we're basically connecting up a gateway device to your VLAN that we've created for you. It's going to take us a few minutes to do that. It might be a good few minutes. We might see this finish in about 10 minutes. So, all right, we'll carry on. So we can download. So now we're all excited. We've got a gateway. Let's go and configure our Cisco device. I happen to have a Cisco ASS 5505. I thought, this is wonderful. Because if I go and click on, so confusing. If I go and click on download, I can download a configuration script. And I go Cisco, and I go, oh, this looks like it's me. And then, oh. So the one I got was still running 8.2. Which is fun, right? Because 8.3 has some different access control syntax than 8.2. So I had to sit and figure out what the changes were. The point is, even though those are the devices that we support and the versions, if you can create a secure IPsec tunnel, you can probably connect up to Azure. There's some great blog posts out there on how to deal with different devices, and even with a Windows server, creating the VPN connection. So we'll choose 8.3, and we'll click on Wookie Cookie. And we will open this, and it's going to go, would you like to buy an app that opens CFG files? Like, no, we don't really want to do that. So, it's give us a script. Now, you can't just hit run on the script in your little console thing. What you've got to do is see the first line. I'll highlight it because my arm doesn't stretch that far. This here, and at the back, get here earlier. That's all I'm saying. If you can understand this stuff, then good on you. It says object group network, and then in kind of less than greater than, it says RP Azure Network. You've got to replace that with whatever name, and then there's a whole bunch of other things you've got to replace with the right IP addresses and shared keys and things like that. So you kind of work through that script, doing a search and replace on all your config settings, and then when you're done, you can go and run that against your router, and you'll set up your side of the tunnel. And then that'll connect, and everything will be good, and you'll have a network connection there. We're not going to do that, so it's actually going to keep yellow, because we're not going to create the other end of that there. So that's our virtual network. If we go and configure, we get some Lovely information. Now, I always like telling people this. This subscription ID is how we find you in Azure. So if you have to open up a support ticket, then part of it is like, tell us your subscription ID. And the subscription ID shows up in so many places in the portal, but it's this GUID thing, and that's what we're asking for if we're saying, what's your subscription ID? Okay? Worth pointing out. You can see the affinity group we're in, and address space, DNS server, local connection, and so on. All very good. So, that's that. So, next thing, we need to put, we're going to create some virtual machines. We're kind of like Hyper-V, and we're going to use some VHDs with the OS on or with data on. So we need a place to put these VHDs. We've got a thing called Windows Azure Storage, which allows you to store a whole bunch of stuff and disks. You can go and read on the website what the other stuff is, but it allows us to put disks in there. Every time we put a disk in there, we call them blobs. We actually have a special name for them. We call them page blobs. Not why. We create 3 copies of that. So every disk, that VM that you have running in Windows Azure, will have 3 copies of that disk, and it's kept in perfect sync. Not only that, we also go and replicate those, unless you turn this off, to another data center at least 100 miles away. And they work in pairs. So we've got 2 in Europe, Amsterdam and Dublin, so they work in pairs. If you create a VM in Amsterdam, there'll be a copy in Dublin. And we do this for failover at our level, not your level. So we're doing it to kind of help you out. If we have this massive catastrophe, we could then point everything back to the other data center. It's not for you to go, oh, I'd like to fail over. Can you just spin up? No, we don't do that, right? What do they call it? An extinction level event might set this off, like an asteroid or something hitting the Earth, if you believe in that stuff. Within the storage account, we have a container. Think folder or directory, if you're old school. And within those, we've got blobs, and they're just files. And great way to think of it, my VHD is a file, it's a blob, it's going to live in a folder, that's kind of how it works. When we create a storage account and we start creating VHDs, Windows Azure will create a container called VHDs. That way when you're looking, it's like obvious what it is, right? So let's go and create a storage account. So down on here, storage, I'm going to say, now, ooh, we've already got one. Because when we created that first VM, it automatically created one for us. We don't want to use that, so we're going to create a new storage account. And we're going to call this Bacon VHD. And, ooh, look, not only do we have the data centers where we can create this, we also have that affinity group. And we want to create that in the affinity group, so it keeps us together. So we'll do that. And we'll create a storage account. Lovely jubbly. This takes a few minutes to go and do. What we're doing is we're allocating you now a storage node. Each storage account can hold up to 100 terabytes. Your VHDs can be up to 1 terabyte in size. And on an extra large VM, you can attach 16 of them. So you can have 16 terabytes of disk space on a single VM there. Once we've done that, it's going to give us a set of storage keys and URLs that we can access it on. And while that's creating that one, we'll go and dig into the one we created earlier. It's a bit like Blue Peter for those from England. And we can get into the dashboard. Now, ooh, monitoring's not available. We have to turn it on. Here's the URLs. So this is the URLs of blobs that we could access. Now, that container that was created is created as a private container, so you can't access this unless you have the keys. And here's the keys. Now, as well as having a strong password on your virtual machines, these are the keys to the kingdom. Giving these keys to someone is like giving the keys to your data center to someone. They can get at everything. So this is something that you might want to keep super, super secretly safe. Okay? Usually, you don't need to kind of have this data lying around. Some of the tools will need you to kind of create a storage connection, if you like, with it in. But other than that, you want to keep it under lock and key. We have a primary and we have a secondary. This allows you to rotate the keys. So you can regenerate. So what we could do is start off with primary. Then maybe we've got a policy like every 2 weeks we're going to rotate the keys. So then we switch to secondary, feed that into all the apps. Then we regenerate the primary one 2 weeks later and just alternate between them. Okay. So it gives you a little bit of flexibility there. Did anybody quickly try and copy them down? I was a little intrigued. Anybody doing that? Perhaps it's just me. The only thing you can configure, other than turning the monitoring on and logging, which doesn't sound the only thing, does it? Is the geo-replication. So we could turn this off if we didn't want to do that. So that's our storage account created, Bacon VHD. So what we can do now is go and create a virtual machine. Now, I am going to go back to the slides and explain some of the virtual machine stuff, but it takes me about 6 minutes for the virtual machines to spin up, and I would like to connect to them before the session's finished. So I'm going to create 3 virtual machines in a row, and then we're going to come back to them. You might get a little bit like, whoa, what's going on here? But we'll try not to. So I'm going to create a new virtual machine from a gallery. I'm going to choose a server 2012. I am going to give this a name, and I'm going to call it Bacon DNS. Because you don't know how many times I've done this. I need to give the user a name. And then pick how many cores I'd like to have. We'll go for medium. And we'll paste in the DNS name. Don't be silly. Hey. You don't have to make them the same. One is the name of the machine in the portal, and also the name we tell Windows it is. The other one is the DNS name of the IP address we give you publicly. I've got a slide that explains this, because it's a little bit like, whoa. We can also pick which virtual network we want to be on, and which subnet we'd like to be in. So this is our first machine, so we're going to choose the AD DNS subnet. We'll click on next. Storage account, we should choose Bacon VHD. That was the bit I missed. Cool. Availability set, we'll ignore. Cool, we've got a virtual machine creating now. While that's creating, what I want to do is just go and quickly spin up another one. Bacon Web. We can make that a large one. Why not? Bacon Web 01. Go into Bacon, choose the net, choose the subnet, click on the next. I thought I'd lost network connection. That was my own cry. And why don't we just do one more? If I want to show you load balanced endpoints, I've got to kind of have two of those web things running. So we're going to call this Bacon Web. Why not? No! Which means I typed it wrong there. Hey, make that one large as well. Click the next. So, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to connect this to an existing virtual machine. Ooh, this is a little bit crazy. So, I'm creating a web server. The idea is I want to create a couple of web servers and put them behind a load balanced endpoint. Cool. So, what I'm going to do is instead of creating a standalone virtual machine, I'm going to connect it to an existing virtual machine. Now, the only challenge is, for me right now, is I can't do this until the virtual machine's finished creating in the first place. So, in 6 minutes, we're going to come back to this screen and finish this wizard. This is why we have slides, so we can talk about what just happened. So, we've got these VHDs, these are blobs. The VHDs, actually, you can create a VHD on your laptop in Disk Manager, create VHD, copy some files on, and then upload it into Windows Azure. And then you can attach that to a VM running there. You could spin up Hyper-V. Create a virtual machine in Hyper-V. Use the VHD format, not the VHDX. We don't support that yet. And then upload that VHD into Windows Azure and create a virtual machine from it. You could sysprep it as well and create lots of virtual machines from it. So VHD connected through to a disk. That's what you'll see in the portal. They'll be listed as disks. Then you can create images from those disks. You can also create virtual machines from those disks. And finally, just in case you thought you were following along, you can create virtual machines from the images too. Are you with me? If you are, good luck. So, three places where we can pull these virtual machine images from. One is the image gallery, and you've seen me in that a few times where we've got the Windows servers and the Linux servers. We can also create our own images, and I'll show you how to do that in a moment. We also have a VM depot. So we have and I haven't shown you this yet, but you can go in and we have a whole bunch of open source VMs that's been supplied by Bitnami, I think, that have Ubuntu with Ruby and MySQL installed and a whole bunch of stuff. Maybe there's a Drupal one, Joomla, and all that kind of thing. And basically what you can do is pick from their list, choose something, and then it copies that image into your storage account. And then you can create a virtual machine from it. So that's what the VM depot is. Either way, what's going to happen is when you create a virtual machine, it copies that disk into your storage account, which of course makes three copies of that. You then spin up a virtual machine. Remember, we created a subnet, so we want to kind of go and put that virtual machine in a subnet. You can also, so we give you a disk with an OS on, and depending on the OS and which menu choice, you'll get a different size on that. You can add more data disks. So let's say you were spinning up a SQL Server, and let's say we give you 127 gig as the OS drive. You might kind of want a bigger drive. So you might attach a couple of 500 gig drives and put your data files for SQL Server on there. Perhaps you'll add another drive and put your log file on there, right? So you can add disks to it, and you can also take disks away. It's magic. So creating an image. I might actually just cancel out of that because I think it was a bit too quick. So create an image. When we create a virtual machine, we might want to kind of go, right, I want to put my antivirus software in there. I want to go and configure it how I like it. I want to go and put IIS as a role on, maybe some other things. And then I want to make lots of these copies. So what I can do is create a virtual machine, configure it how I like, and then run sysprep. Sysprep on Windows will generalize the machine so that you can spin up multiple copies of that. You then basically say capture. You sit in front of your laptop and go capture. No, there's a button that says capture. And then once that's done, it deletes the virtual machine, creates a disk from it, and then that disk will appear in the list of images that you can create virtual machines from. It's super easy to go and set that up. So we've got some virtual machines running. Ta-da! We've got Bacon Web and Bacon DNS as well. This was our Linux machine, and because I know I'm going to get... because I'm going to get a little bit confused with myself, I'm just going to delete it. There's a reason why I'm deleting it. You'll see in a minute. So this is my DNS server. Right. All the magic's over with. All the Azure stuff's gone. All we need to do now is RDP into this and configure it. So I'm going to click on connect, and it's going to say, hey, would you like to RDP? It looks a bit funny. We need to use that account that we created. So David Egan, password is, wouldn't you like to know? Bam, bam, bam. This is pretty impressive across my phone. Please go across my phone. My wife's going to love it when she sees the 18T bill. On that. Let me just... Should we try it? It actually came up with a security warning because the machine we're connecting to looks a bit funny compared to the cert we're getting or something. It's fine. Now, notice also while this is loading up, can you see the port? It's 63398. When we enable RDP, the RDP port is 3389, something like that. What? Do remember things. What we do is we create a random port on your network's router, if you like, and set up port forwarding. So if you're connecting with that DNS name, it'll map through. So this is going to run just a little startup kind of thing for Windows. While it's doing that, it takes a few seconds across the web there. I'm going to click on going to the dashboard here. So this is the dashboard of my VM. If I scroll down, I get lots of interesting information, like the DNS name. This is the one we configured earlier. This is also the public IP address. You can see it's 131.179.17. And then we've got the internal IP address, and as I predicted, it's 10.0.0.4. Now, remember, we've got an external IP address and an internal IP address. So if this is connected to my network, and I'm sitting on my network, I could RDP into 10.0.0.4, assuming, you know, I configured my router okay. Because I'm not, I've had a RDP essentially on the 137.1.17.9.17, which means I've had to open a port up to allow RDP access in. And we call this an endpoint. So if I click on endpoints, you can see here that we have public port 63398 is connected to 3389 internally. And this is just like setting up port forwarding on your router or your gateway, okay? Except you're doing it here in the port. If I wanted to open up another port, and let's go and do the web one, and let's go and open up port 80, what I can do is say, hey, I'd like to add an endpoint. I'd like to call this, I know, HTTP in for fun. I'd like to say public port 80 goes to private port 80. You don't have to change it. Click on OK. And then what we're doing is we're configuring the gateway for that machine, the router for that machine, if you like, to allow port 80 in from the internet. Without that, it doesn't matter how you configure the firewall in Windows, it's not going to let port 80 into your network. And we do this not only at the kind of connection coming to the internet, we enforce this policy throughout all of the network devices, even the hypervisor. So that rule isn't just in a one place, it's everywhere. So that's our port. Let's go back to our RDP. So it should be, no, that's a PowerShell window, well, that's errors in. Ta-da. Now, if you know anything about Windows, you know what's going to happen next. We're going to add a role. In fact, before we add the role, I want to show you something. On the local server, I'm going to do the thing that everybody really wishes they could do on their network, but can't because you've got security policies. Turn off that thing. This is a Windows Server 2012, so we've got this lovely start menu. Now, it's going to try and load MSN or something like that. I will try and load MSN. This is the funniest thing. It's the funniest thing to sit and watch people trying to do this. It's like, wow, what? You know, it's like, I'm at a Microsoft conference, doing. It's like, what's going on? So, let's do ipconfig. When you're ready. You can see nothing because I didn't do /all. You see our IP address is 10.0.0.4, subnet mask's in there, default gateway, blah, blah, blah. When I do the full thing out, the bottom, just around where the mouse pointer is, you can see the DNS server sent at 10.0.0.4. So when we're trying to do an NSA lookup, it's kind of going to itself going, and then nothing happens. So what we've got to do is we've either got to manually set that, or we've got to do what you all want me to do, which is, oh, shut up might be one of them, but we'll go through and we'll go and put a Active Directory domain services on here. Shouldn't need a restart, but there you go. So it's going to take a few minutes to run through this. This is just Windows. This is nothing magic Azure-y thing going on now, right? I'm just in Windows. I could SSH into my Linux box had I not deleted it and done Linux-y kind of things. You know, what is it? apt-get, update, all that kind of fun stuff. It's just Windows. It's just Linux. There is nothing else magical now. I can plug this into System Sender and manage it as a server. I can install apps on it, like SharePoint, SQL, whatever. It's just a Windows server. Like, oh, okay, I get it. It's just a Windows server. Lovely. So we created that endpoint while the DNS thing's going on. I want to create that other machine, which I backed out of. So I'm going to save ROM gallery. We'll choose server again. We'll choose, because I have no idea where I am now with the naming. So choose large. Okay, now I'm going to connect to an existing virtual machine, and I'm going to pick Bacon Web as the existing virtual machine. And then kind of choose the web the web subnet and the storage account. It already picks my virtual network because it's like, hang on a minute, you want to connect it to an existing machine that's already in somewhere. You probably need to be in the same place. I'll click on next. And then what I want to do is create an availability set. Ooh. We'll call it Bacon Web ES for availability set. We'll click on OK. And we'll let that machine spin up and create. So we've got lots of things cooking in the kitchen now. This is like the cooking show where you're kind of like, hang on a minute, he's just now cooking with like yogurt, cream, two chickens and a banana. So what's going on? So we've got our domain controller. That's spinning up. It's doing its installing its domain services. Once that's ready, we'll go and do a DC promo. That'll give us DNS, and then all the machines will suddenly be able to access the internet and do name resolution, surprisingly. We could then domain join these machines. Ta-da. It's just Windows, remember? Now, if I connected this to my on-premises network and I already had a domain, I could spin up a server in the cloud and join it to my existing domain. I could even then make that a domain controller as part of my existing domain and even make it a read-only domain controller, maybe. Why might I do that? Well, if I've got apps running in virtual machines in Azure and they need to go and make DNS, ask AD questions, you don't want that traffic going all the way back down on premises and coming back up, right? Call latency, it's not good for you. So that's why we might want to spin up an AD controller. But it is just AD. There's nothing magical that you've got to do on the Azure piece. We've got that second Bacon Web Server spinning up, and we're going to come back to that once it's completely spun up. Let's go and see where on earth we are in this. So, availability sets and endpoints. So we spun up that first machine, and we got an IP address for that first machine, right? And to access that from the internet, what we get is an endpoint, and we get a DNS name. So that DNS name is always something.cloudapp.net, and we give you a public IP address. Now, so long as you don't delete that virtual machine, we'll probably keep you on that same IP address. We don't guarantee it in any words anywhere, but engineering's pretty confident that you shouldn't get a different IP address unless you delete the virtual machine. Cool. If we're accessing that from the outside world, then we need to open up ports on that. I call it a firewall, but you might have different words for it. But basically, we might say, right, open up port 80, and then map that into a port internally. And it might be port 80 to port 80. It might be port 80 to something else, like we've shown here. Then we're like, cool, so we've got this machine running. But what happens when something happens to that machine? Hang on a minute, Dip. Like, whoa, timeout. It's the cloud, right? Nothing ever happens in the cloud. It all works and all the time, and you've got this high availability thing, haven't you? And my stuff just runs always, even if it's like on fire, it's still running. And if it's not running, you go and run me somewhere else. Oh, wait a minute, if you're running me somewhere else, that means I'm going to be down while you're doing that. Yes, that's right. If we need to go and move you because we're patching something underneath you, perhaps we're patching the hypervisor or rolling out some updates and we need to move you, or you've decided that you want to go onto a bigger machine size, Let's say you started out in a medium and you go, I need a bigger machine size. So you go into the config and you say a large, and we go, oh, we haven't got space for you on this piece of metal. We have to go and move you. But we might reboot you even while we do that. You're going to be down. So if you want to have an app that's highly available, the only way to do it is to have two. This is no different than doing it on premises. This is no different than doing it in the cloud. So how do you get two of those VMs? Well, you create a second one like we did, and you wire it up to the same endpoint. So it has a different internal IP address, but it will have the same external IP address and the same DNS name. This is because we like messing with your mind. So, great. Now what's going to happen is that endpoint is essentially going to load balance between the two machines for you. You don't have to configure it, which works two ways, right? One is you don't have to configure it. Woohoo! I didn't have to configure it. The other side of that is I can't configure it. I can't tell you how I want the load balance between the two machines, define any policy or anything like that. That's correct. We've made it really easy for you today. Works for me. So that's a load balanced endpoint, but what if we wanted to open up a different endpoint to the bottom machine? Well, we can still do that. We can still create another endpoint, and it doesn't have to be load balanced. So maybe we've put SQL on here, and we want to open up port 1433 because we just like pain and suffering. We can do that. Now, remember, when we created a virtual machine, we got that RDP port opened. And we did that little mapping between, what was it, 63,000 something or other to port 3389. Well, if we've got two behind the same endpoint with the same public IP address, how does that work? Well, it's easy. It's kind of obvious as well. We give you a different port number for the second VM. Woo-hoo. So let's have a look at that. That virtual machine's up and running now. It's like a well-oiled machine. If I click on this and go into endpoints, you can see I've got port 65359 maps in. And remember, the other one was port, where is it? Oh, on Bacon Web, it was 56097. So these are the different ports. But if I go and have a look at the DNS name for this, back on the dashboard, you can see I am, right now, I'm Bacon Web 01. And here, I am Bacon Web 01. Same. So the last thing we need to do is, on endpoints on here, is we'll add a new endpoint. We're going to say, hey, I want a load balanced endpoint. We pick from the list. We click on next. We give it a name because we like that. You might want to name them different. I always feel if you name them different, it's because you like to confuse yourself on that. Cool. So now we have a load balanced endpoint configured. And we can now start accepting port 80 HTTP traffic across those two servers. Assuming, of course, we installed IIS and put a site on to accept that. Lovely. So, let's do a little bit of a recap, because that was a lot. We created a virtual network, was the first thing. We then created a virtual machine in the virtual network. And we told it we wanted this machine to be the DNS server. We did that when we created the virtual network. Then we had to remember to go into the machine and say, I'd like a DNS server. And we did that because we were going to start the DC promo. So we should probably go back and start that DC promo on that virtual machine, because I know it's a blue screen, but it's not really a blue screen, is it? That has just disconnected. And probably why is I probably hit my bandwidth cap. Oh, yes, I know. It's fun to be me. This will be a bit assuming the connection stays, this will be a little bit faster as well. So that's done now, by the looks of it. So what we need to do is promote this to a domain controller. And we're going to add it to a new forest, because we haven't got one. We need to give this a root domain name, so I'm going to call it corp.contoso.com, because we can. We'll leave all those things the same. Now, wait a minute. I want a place to put my Active Directory data, my sysfol and all that kind of thing. So what I want to do is add a disk to this machine. So let's go into File and Disk Storage Services, and we'll go into Disks, and we'll get that bit ready. Back in the portal for this machine, what I'm going to do is I'm going to attach an empty disk, and I'm going to say, hey, give me a 20 gig disk on this. I do have the ability to change its name and all that kind of thing, which I advise you to change the name, particularly the file name, because when you look at the list and they're all named like that, you're going to be like, which disk's which, right? I would also encourage, like, if I was naming this, I would say, we know the machine's called that, but then I would go data 20. And then I look at it and I go, oh, it's the data disk, and it's the 20 gig data disk, right? It's good. Little naming thing. You're welcome. Then we can set our host cache preference. What we can do is we can cache this drive on the metal that's running your virtual machine. And you've got two choices. You can cache it for read-only. Now, when does read-only make a lot of sense? Well, quite often, what I do is I have a VHD called software.vhd. And I created this on my machine, and I uploaded it into the storage account. And that has my SharePoint install files, my SQL install files, my antivirus install files, whatever else like that. I attach that, and then I go and run all the setup stuff from it. Right? And I put it into read-only cache mode, and it feels, I don't know, it might not, but it feels like it goes a little bit faster. We can also do read-write, which is good. Now, there is a little chance that you might lose some data here if there's a catastrophe, right? So it's like having a non-battery backed up write cache on your disk controller, right? A little slim chance. We're going to leave it as non because this is our AD. We probably don't want any kind of mishaps with this. So we'll add that. It's going to take a few seconds to add. And back on this machine, what should happen, with any luck, is we'll see a new 20 gig drive appear there. When it does, it's just a drive. And it's just Windows, so we do whatever we normally do in Windows to add a drive, which is we click on it and we'll go and say, what is it, initialize drive or something funny like that. And then we'll run through and we'll format the drive, and then we can start using it, mount it up to a file letter and something like that. This does take a few seconds to go through there. Talk amongst yourselves, I don't know. Oh, there we are. Call me Mr. Impatient, but... Ta-da! Cool. So, we'll create a new volume. I think this does it all in one go. 120 gig. Yes, it'll be brought online. Next. Create. That's how we run Windows, right? That's how I install all my software. Next. Done. Great. So this is going to format a drive. It's going to mount it up as the F drive. It's going to take a few seconds to do this. This is Windows. In Linux, you can mount the drive as well and format it and do whatever you like to it as well on that. So while it's doing that, we can continue on with this wizard. We've got to put in a password. So... click on next. Ignore some DNS error. This is because I don't actually own the contoso.com domain. It's going to say, hey, do you want to change this? No, I'll just leave it as the default. And here what I can do is change this all to, I know what it was called to you. Was it that one? So now it's going to DC promo, DNS is going to appear and all that kind of thing, and it's going to run through and do that. And it will reboot when it's done, and everything will be good, and that takes about 5 or so minutes to run through that on there. And then we'll have a DNS server as well as a domain controller, and all will be good. We can then RDP into those other servers and domain join them. However, that gets tedious really, really quickly. So one thing I'm not showing you today, and there's a guy called Michael Washam has a session, and he's going to do all this stuff in PowerShell. I'm going to show you a little bit of PowerShell because I know you want to. But everything I've shown you, you can do in PowerShell. So we created the VM, we added a disk, and we can domain join it, open up endpoints all in one pipeline of PowerShell. So it's kind of cool. I'm going to show you a little bit in a moment. So what have we covered? We've covered disks, we've covered images. Let's go in here, and we're going to RDP into this box, and I want to show you how we can generalize this machine. So this is my web machine. I've decided I'm going to have 50 servers in my web farm. So I don't want to go and create 50 servers, even in PowerShell. What I want to do is go in, configure this a little bit, perhaps install IIS, put my antivirus stuff on, and then I want to create an image from this. So I'm going to connect up to it. That's much quicker than my phone's cell phone, isn't it? So what I'm going to do is install my antivirus, install IIS, configure some registry settings, create a couple of little temporary folders, set up a website, and then we'll create a sysprep, right? Now, watch how fast I do this. Wait for it. It's going to be overwhelmed. You're going to be like, you're going to want to hire me, quite frankly, the speed at which I do this. It's taking a bit longer than I thought. Oh, here we are. What's fun, and this will drive you insane, see this Bacon Web 01? This is the DNS name. If I go and RDP into this other box, guess what appears at the top of the window? The same. So it's a good idea to set some sort of background or something so you know which machine you're on, otherwise it will kill you quite severely. Is it in System 32 and then... I know sysprep spelled like that. I don't know why. So, you missed where I did all that IIS configuration. Now you should pay more attention. So, what I want to do is run the sysprep. I'm going to go for an out-of-the-box experience. I want to generalize it, and I want to shut down. I do not want to reboot. So that would be bad. Well, it wouldn't be bad, but you'd be back to the beginning again. We'll click on OK, and that will start doing through its stuff, and eventually it will shut down. Now, this takes about 10 minutes to get this bit done, shut down, and then for us to show that you shut down here. But once you shut down, we'll then enable the capture button, and you'll click capture and give it a name. And that will then appear on your list of images. Now, I don't want to wait 10 minutes for that to happen because I only have 11 minutes and 3 seconds left. So I'm going to switch to a subscription, and you can, as you can see, you can have lots of subscriptions. I'm going to switch to a subscription that I created earlier, and I propped up a domain controller, and I threw up a SQL database, and I thought, hell, let's go and install SharePoint 2013. So I installed SharePoint 2013. I've got an app server running, and I've got n number of web front ends running in my SharePoint deployment. I say n number because every time I do this demo, I add a new web front end to it. I also have a base image, and the base image has Windows Server installed with the SharePoint prereqs installed and the SharePoint binaries installed. We haven't run the add form wizard yet. So when this appears, it'll take a few seconds. What I'm going to do is I'm going to show you the website running so you can all see it. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, hey, we need to increase the number of servers running on our website. And I'm going to show you a little bit of PowerShell script that's going to do that for you. So, it's almost like I've done this before. It's great. So here's all my virtual machines, and you can see I've got an affinity group. They're all in the West US. I've got my app server, my database, my domain controller, and I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I arrived in Vegas on Monday morning with 2 web servers. So this is the 1, 2, 3. This will be the 4th time I've done this demo on here. Now, the other thing I did was I created a base image. So when I click on images, I get this base image displayed here. If I go and say create new virtual machine from gallery, you can see I've got SP base in the list here. I've also got a bunch of other things, and the bunch of other things is actually my disks. So if I go to disks, this is all the disks that I have. And you can see there's my Bacon Web ones. There's the one that we nearly created. No, that's the data disk, sorry. So we can go through here. And look, the reason why I kind of encoded that machine to have the size and everything was so that it kind of shows up in the list. So here's my site. My actual virtual machines for the web are this one. And you can see I've got this conweb.cloudob.net, which I want to grab. But I've also got this button here, which is called Cloud Services. And if I go in here, you can see I've got not only Bacon Web 1, which is what we've just created, I've also got this Conweb. Now, Bacon Web 1, if I go and click on that, and go and click on instances, there's our 2 web servers running on it. On my Conweb, here's my 5 web servers running on it. Don't you love it? So this is a way I can watch my, if you like, load-balanced endpoint. We call it a cloud service. There is another piece of technology in Windows Azure that allow you to create other cloud service-like things, but we're not talking about those, not in the next 7 minutes and 55 seconds anyway. So let's go and browse to that. It's our Contoso Electronics Superstore site. It is a public site running on Windows Azure on SharePoint 2013. I can go through and I can buy washing machines. It's fantastic. If I go back here, what I've done is I've created essentially a jump box. So I'm going to connect up to this jump box. And the reason I've done this is I wanted to be on the same in the same network and in the same domain as my SharePoint. So this is just like doing it for real. Now, I need to remember what the password is here. Hey, I'm on top form today. So, we've got a domain controller, we've got a database, we've got an app server, we've got 5 web servers. We're going to add a new web server and add it to the load balanced endpoint. To do this, we've created a base image, which is just Windows Server with a SharePoint file sysprepped. We told Windows Azure, go make a base image out of this. We're going to use PowerShell to do it because PowerShell is awesome. So here's my script. Let's go and call this 3004. Now, I can actually write way better PowerShell scripts than this. But if I write how I kind of talk about it, it's easier to follow. Right? If I was writing this as production PowerShell, I'd probably have a couple of functions that did most of the work, right? But I've wrote it out in full here. Now, what you can see at the top is we're saying, hey, I want you to set my default subscription to SharePoint Farm, because what we actually have is Azure subscriptions loaded in to the machine. Now, what I've done is to get this PowerShell connected up, you've got to give it access to the Azure portal. We have an API behind that. And what you do is there's a command which basically imports the settings. It'll send you the portal, you'll log into the portal, it'll download a settings file, and then you'll import this into your PowerShell. And that's how I can connect here. It's well documented on WindowsAzure.com under documentation. Right? I like to tell you that because you'll sit down, you'll start typing commands, and you'll be like, nothing works. David, you're a fool. But you've got to do that little bit of setup. The next thing I go and do is go and get my base image from the list of images, go and set up some machine names and everything like that, go and read in my super secret password, which the smart cookies amongst you, you'll see there. I go and create a new credential from that, and then I create a new VM with the name here, the machine size, the image name, put it in the availability set. Remember, availability sets, oh, did I explain availability sets? No, I didn't. We did load balance endpoints, and then I missed off availability sets. So, front row, you're all web servers now, okay? If I put you all in the same availability set, we'll spread you out enough around the data center, but keep you close enough, because you're all part of the same affinity group, so that any one hardware failure won't take all of you down. That's kind of cool, because also when we do updates, we look at the affinity groups, and then we look at the availability sets, and we never take all the machines down from an availability set at the same time. So this is your way of kind of helping us understand how to kind of manage your applications. Then I go and create a machine, go and add an endpoint to it, which is this load balanced endpoint thing. Here I've got some config. Now, what I'm doing is I'm saying, hey, you know what? I would like you to add to the domain called corp.contoso.com, and I'd like you to be in the subnet web. So as part of the command line, it says, spin up, go and domain join. The other cool thing is we now enable remote PowerShell in the VM as well. So what do I do in the rest of the lines is I go and connect up, and basically I enable WSMan cred SSP. Why do I need this? Well, when I run this connection, I need to run under a user account. And when you're remote PowerShell, you're running under the network service account here. So when you try and connect to the database, it doesn't work. If I enable that line up above, what happens is when I connect with David Agin account, it then connects to the database with the David Agin account. These are all SharePoint commands I'll go and run, and we'll hit on go, and it will start cranking that out. Lovely jubbly. We can now go for coffee, and we'll come back in about 3 or 4 minutes later. We'll have a new machine running. It'll be already on the load balanced endpoint, and it'll have already run through the joining form part of SharePoint. It just so happens I've figured out, I have no idea how SharePoint can kind of automatically get me into a web role, right? I'm not a SharePoint expert, but it all seems to work fine and dandy. Cool. So, last few things want to wrap up. That was the availability set. That's where we were going with that. Cool. PowerShell lets you automate everything you've just seen. In fact, the only reason I did it with the portal is because following along with this in PowerShell is a little bit trickier, right? You will do the first time in this through the portal, and then I encourage you to get the PowerShell commandlets and learn how to use them. And then you'll be creating monstrous deployments in seconds. There's nothing like a for loop creating VMs. I tell you, it's awesome. You can also do a lot more across a wider range of VMs and services with PowerShell. So if you wanted to change the port on all of the machines, you can write a PowerShell, say, get all the machines, pipe it through an update port, pipe it back out to an update VM kind of thing. There's also some things like changing the DNS, changing the local network configuration that you can't yet do in the portal, but we're enabling it in PowerShell, so you can do that in PowerShell. So do that. Michael Washam has a session, and I before I started, I looked it up, and I knew when it was. No, I can't remember. I suggest you go there, and he's going to show you a whole bunch of tricks and stuff in PowerShell. But you've seen this before, yeah? Do fill out your evaluations. We love to hear from you. You can win some amazing prizes. I made that bit up. All the sessions are recorded and will be on this place when we're done. And other than that, I'd like to thank you very much. I hope this has been useful, and get cracking with your Windows Azure stuff. Thank you.